Welcome to the special edition of Voices from Our Community. I'm your guest host, BT Michaels, and I will be joined in the studio today by John Zingali, candidate for State Representative District 18, Position 1, and Sue Marshall, candidate for Councillor District Number 5. Hello and welcome back. I am here with John Zingali. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, doing great. Today is the day that ballots drop, or they are mailed out. So it's a bit nerve-wracking because it's
official
that I've put myself out there for this.
So going into that, how has your experience been with it?
Yeah, it's been exciting, exhilarating, nerve-wracking, all of the emotions. Luckily, I've got a great support group. My wife has been so incredible. My teacher friends, my best friends, my mom, my dad, all my family. But couldn't do this without my wife or my kids by my side. But it's been definitely an eye-opening experience.
Oh, without a doubt. And you're running for State Representative, District 18, Position 1. Go a little bit of bend to your background here. You have your master's in teaching from the University of Portland, so very local here. That's really awesome. Your community service record is outstanding. You have experience with volunteering with Fort Vancouver National Historic Site as a partner, Southwest Washington National History Day regional co-coordinator. If you'd like to talk a little bit about either one of those, they're both really, really important programs.
Yeah, it's, so I teach at iTech Preparatory, which is a STEM PBL school here for Vancouver Public. And what I've been able to do over these years is design my own curriculum. Okay. And so when I got to Washington State History, I sat down and said, I used to live in Beaverton for a little bit, and I would drive past the fort like every single day. And I'm like, what is that? And so I went with a teacher friend over winter break one year, and we paid to get into the national park, but we were locked out. Like, you couldn't get into the buildings because it was December and the parks had gone through a ton of closure, like funding. They were out of funding.
Right.
And so I'm like, well, this stinks. We paid to like learn, but we can't get in. And I had just taken a picture that summer on the top of Mount St. Helens that was a 360-degree picture, kind of like a Google Street View.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I started to do some research. I'm like, well, can we create like a virtual tour or something? Like, so if you can't get in, you could still learn about the fort.
Right.
And so I found a camera, a special camera that takes those 360 pictures. And I showed it to my principal and I said, what if we do this? And she was like, let's try it.
Yeah.
And so next thing I know, I got permission to buy the camera. And so I actually went and climbed Mount St. Helens again that summer with a couple of my buddies.
Okay.
And I took some pictures along the way and created a virtual reality tour of hiking Mount St. Helens, which was which was awesome too, right? And then I approached the National Park Service and said, hey, what do you think about this? And they were just kind of blown away by the idea. And our partnership began. And so my students created a virtual reality tour for the Fort Vancouver National Historic Site. They took the pictures, but they also did, we learned a lot about archaeological thinking. As a STEM school, we wanted to learn about some different fields within all of the sciences and social sciences. And so we focused in on archaeology. So each kid got an artifact that they had to research and learn about and write something. And then they recorded themselves saying it. And so that's been out. And then National History Day is something that I wish I knew about when I was in middle school and high school.
Me too.
For those that don't know, it's kind of like the sport of history. And you have to create museum exhibits, documentaries. You can even do performances. You can write a paper or now websites as well. Website design is what you can do. And you can do this individually or in teams. And so, once again, being at a PBL STEM school, we want collaboration. And we want hands-on learning. Every year there's a theme. This year I think it's frontiers in history. And so we're teaching U.S. history at our school. And so the kids will have to pick a topic that fits in with frontiers. Now that could be like the space frontier. That could be a medical frontier. It could literally be the Oregon Trail if you wanted it to. Or learning about the indigenous cultures that are here within our area and taking it those different ways. But then they'll work together to design a museum exhibit. We always try to make them interactive and things like that. And
that's outstanding.
And then we have a robotics team. So that's where it's kind of fun to see those different things. And that's where I've seen a lot of these successes that we've been able to do here in Vancouver Public and Southwest Washington these last 10 years. and I want to try to do more and help other communities have what we have down here.
So segueing into that, so this is your first time candidate. So this brings up a two-part question for me. So number one, what was the change that motivated you? What did you see, the opportunity that motivated you to go ahead and pursue in an elected life? And then number two, how do you feel being a brand new voice benefits you in the campaign, in the election?
Sure, those are the good questions. You know, prior to teaching, actually teaching is a second career for me. I started, you know, when I was 31-ish, yeah, something like that. and I spent 16 years in grocery retail before that.
Okay.
You know, working my way up through the Albertsons company. But teaching, I had my history degree, and so that I did go back, and after I met my wife, I'm like, you know, let's pursue this. And so I teach middle school social studies. So literally every day, you know, I'm in the trenches trying to teach civics and active right. citizenship to the kids. I hand make pocket constitutions for all of my students. They get like a little leather, pleather-ish cover and everything. And it's great because I watch them graduate and they usually have it on them sometimes
Amazing.
At graduation. And, we write letters to our senators and to the congresspeople to, as we're studying the Constitution. Hey, they're exercising their First Amendment rights. I've always been proponent of active citizenship, even when you can't vote, because you still have a voice, you're still a constituent.
Right.
And their voice matters. And I think the younger we can just get kids involved in that process, the better off our society is going to be.
Absolutely.
You know, my goal was to never tell them what to think, but to teach them how to think. Yep. And, you know, that's where I found, you know, what they're really caring about. You know, I think the number one issue that they were writing about a lot of times was climate change.
Right.
And then gun safety laws, just quite frankly, because they live it every single day. Those are two big issues that a lot of the kids were worried about. They're also really worried about homelessness,
right?
Houselessness, because, you know, some of them had gone through that. And kudos to those kids for wanting to share their story and let others learn. And there's a lot of empathy with the kids. You know, when you learn that your friend is houseless, it changes your perception of what that is.
No, absolutely.
And I have a lot of hope in this generation. I think they're really active, excitable, and like I said, I think empathy is that key piece, and they want to see things change.
No, absolutely.
And that's what brings me to this first-time candidate. I've been teaching middle school social studies these last 10 years. But part of the change was I was redistricted.
Okay.
You know, every 10 years, there's a census. And I liked my old representation. I used to be in the 49th legislative district.
Okay.
But then my wife, you know, kept going like, John, if this is something you want to do, you got to go meet with people. I'm like, okay. And I sat down and they're like, you're not in the 49th anymore. You're in the 18th. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And so I sat down, I looked at it, and I'm one of those people where I would regret not doing this because it's something that I love to do. I love politics. I love civics. I'm the one that runs a lot of the Washington, D.C. field trips for the students across, you know, the district.
Right.
And when I've been at the nation's capital, I get like this feeling inside me. You know, I've had a chance to meet Dr. John Lewis a couple times before he passed, or Dr. Terrence Roberts, who was part of the Little Rock Nine. And these
right.
people that really like stood up for the rights of citizens. And I just feel like in my position, I can do more to be a voice for all of the kids, all the families that I've been teaching these years, and the people that have been kind of traditionally, you know, forgotten about or not had a seat at the table.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you staple in your statement, and I think you just brought it up a little bit here a little bit ago, is providing a safe and high quality education for all students. And I think that's a question that's it's on everybody's mind. And you brought up some good key points with that. And then, you know, the parent concern with the safety at school or even safety with inclusion within the schools. So looking at post-election, no matter which way how it turns out, how do you view or what steps do you see yourself taking in order to provide that safe opportunity for students?
Yeah, we want kids to feel safe at school. And part of that is making sure that they feel included in everything. Being a teacher, you know, they don't teach in teacher school is that, you know, a kid will come out to you
right.
as being LGBTQ. And that is a powerful moment.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I was the first person to learn about that. But, you know, throughout my years too, I'd been to Pink Triangle Park in San Francisco, and they have some rose quartz there that they actually say, you know, take this so it empowers you. And so
right.
I actually took extra And whenever I did have a student, I would actually give that to them.
Awesome.
So, you know, that's part of, you know, making sure they're feeling safe at school. Obviously, we want to make sure, like, just physically safe as well, right? Like, that's a big piece. But the other equitable piece is making sure we're funding special education.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not where the level should be. But also, I had the luxury of doing student teaching at Roosevelt High School in Portland, but also Catlin Gable.
Okay.
Two very drastically different schools. And I've seen what we can do. And being at a school where we've given teachers the freedom to be professionals and see the success that we've had. You know, I've got 4 separate state history teacher of the year awards just for doing what I love and following my passion. And we can take the successes here and push that to other places in the state.
And so as we talk about that transition from post-school, setting up students for success into the future, and we talked a little bit about this prior to starting this conversation, about the definition of the American dream now, how that used to look and how that has changed, especially like post-COVID. For you, how does that American dream look now for these students that you're currently teaching that are getting ready to, you know, be the next generation to build that bridge or to go to college?
Yeah, thank you for the question. It was always interesting because growing up, they said, well, what do you want to be? And it was always like, well, I always felt like I had to say the career I wanted to be.
Right.
But if you ask a lot of kids today, they're like, we want to be happy.
Right.
And it's a different mindset. And so they're more socially conscious. They want to work for a company that they feel good about. They want to be able to have flexibility within their job. The pandemic showed us that. Like, if you're not offering some sort of hybrid workforce piece, like, right. There's a lot of people that don't want to do that. You know, and some people are saying, well, people don't want to work. It's like, I think people want to have the job, a specific job. They want to be paid what they're worth. And
right.
So that's where we need to re-envision what the American dream is. I think everyone wants to have their own home and maybe start a family, whatever that family is going to look like, right? It's not going to look like it did in the 50s, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
But we need to be able to make sure that we have affordable homes so that people can do that. You know, I have a cousin, and they just bought their first home a little bit ago. They're 10 years younger than me. And it's, you know, taken them a long time because there's tons of college debt.
Yeah.
And other things at play that are detrimental to our society. It also could be intergenerational or multi-generational families now.
Right.
Right. As a lot of older people are getting older, they need support. And sometimes, you know, it's very expensive to put your parents into a home or anything. But, you know, a lot of families grew up, you know, with intergenerational. And so are we building homes that can allow for that? There's a lot at stake here.
No, absolutely. And as we wrap up here, give you a couple moments here to anything else you want to say to the voters, not only ones that support you, but just voters in general.
Yeah. You know, for those that know me, I just got an email yesterday too from another parent, and you know, they reached out and said, "How do we get a sign?" I'm like, "We want to support you in all everything we do," and they're like, "You know, traditionally we're Republicans, but we're going to vote for you because we know how hard you work and how much you care about our community." I took off work. I'm actually not teaching right now. I'm doing this without a salary because I feel this is what I have to do.
Absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for coming in and give us your time. For everybody listening, get out there and vote. No matter who you're voting for, get out there and vote. Be educated. Educate yourself. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morrell Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morrell Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morrellinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
Are you a musician or artist in the local Vancouver, Portland area? Ready to take things to the next level? Well, New Waves Northwest on KXRW has got you covered. Send in your song submissions to submitmusic@kxrw.fm for a chance to be highlighted on one of our upcoming episodes.
New Waves Northwest is the best place to discover bands and artists from the Pacific Northwest and all over the country. Once again, send submissions to submitmusic@kxrw.fm. And as always, stay wavy.
Hello and welcome back. I am joined here in the studio by Sue Marshall. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. I'm very excited. Today is a really big day.
It is. This is the day that ballots drop, so all this hard work of the last 6 months, we'll see what happens.
It is definitely exciting. You are no stranger to the elective process and campaigning. You board supervisor of Clark County Conservative District, Clark County Clean Water Commission. Your list kind of goes on from there. So for you, what do you feel has changed in the campaigning process, especially as we look at this, like, post-COVID, post-everything that we've been going through lately?
Actually, I was elected to the Conservation District, but it's small by comparison to a county council race. So this is really the first full-fledged race that I've run. So I'm new to that, but I'm not new to politics and public policy. I've had a career working in public policy. But as for campaigning, it's one of those things. You have to really be committed to running. You have to feel it really deeply because it's a strenuous process. It's like jumping into a fast-moving river and you are just swept along and you just have to keep going. Don't look back. Just move on to the next thing. So I feel like I'm proud of myself. I think I've worked really hard and gotten out there and talked to a lot of people. And I think in the process of campaigning, it shapes you as a politician, as someone who's going to serve the community, because you better understand all the different communities. And
so for you, what was the moment that pushed you into wanting to run for District 5? Like, where did you see the opportunity for change and start pursuing that?
That's a really good question, because I did see an opportunity for change. We have a family farm, and my family's been farming for 62 years here in Clark County, and my husband and I took over the farm 7 years ago, and suddenly I got involved with land use planning because it was directly impacting the farm. So I had a stake in it, and through that 7 years working in the community, I haven't been really happy with some of the decisions that the council made, and it seems like that it's weighted towards certain special interests.
Absolutely.
And then when, you know, and I didn't know until a week before the filing deadline what district I was even in, if I was in 2 or if I was in 5, but I landed in 5, and it really, I felt that was the appropriate place for me, being a rural person and largely a rural community. And just looking at who the options might be if it wasn't me running, who the options would be, and I thought, I just felt like
It just didn't work for you.
It didn't work for me at all. And then the other really compelling thing is that the county comprehensive plan, it's updated every 10 years, and it's due in 2025. So whoever is elected, and there's 3 new people that will be elected this round, they'll be overseeing that process and voting on the final policies. And for the rural landscape, I just feel like the next 10 years can be critical, and we have to have protection in place to protect some of those resources that I think everybody in the rural and the urban communities value.
Absolutely. And you point that a lot in your statement. You talk a lot about the rural economy and the importance of planning, which, I mean, absolutely, 100%. So for you, you mentioned promoting local agriculture, small business, clean industry, which are all 3 really hot topics. So looking at post-election, how do you see your pursuit?
Well, I think for starters, there'll be the comprehensive plan, and it has a number of elements, the first of which is public engagement, and the council will adopt a public participation plan. So that, you know, it sometimes is just, oh, let's just check that off. But I think that's fundamental to bringing people together and having a process. The comprehensive plan is intended to be the community's vision of where they live, and it hasn't been, I don't think, and there's been opportunities for the public, all of the public, to come together and talk about that. And I've found in running, you know, this isn't nonpartisan position, and it's the first time that it's been a nonpartisan position, and I found that more than being a Republican or a Democrat, people care about where they live. That's the overriding concern. So I think my message has resonated with people. So there'll be the comprehensive plan, engaging people to really more pursue what the vision is that they'd like to see.
Right.
And then the comprehensive plan deals with a number of topics. So it'll be housing, it'll be jobs, land. But just imagine a map and like where you'd want to put things and where that makes sense. And as far as agriculture goes, there's areas where you look at the soils, you look where there's active farming right now. And those are the areas you want to kind of draw a circle around those areas because the soil for growing things is really important, and we have some of the best soils in the world for growing things, and you can't replace them. So that's one priority. But also, you need to have lands for jobs and industry. And the last comprehensive plan, they cut that short, and there's been more emphasis on residential development. So it's balancing all of those things and making sure all the voices are there to talk about those things. And as far as rural job opportunity, I know there's local farms, there's wineries, there's the equine community, there's a whole network of flower growers that I've tapped into because I grow flowers too. So it's a vibrant economy, and I think that rural and urban communities often, you know, it's like rural versus urban.
Right.
And I think that's just totally the wrong frame, because we need to work together really to develop a livable community.
Absolutely, bridging that gap.
And we can. I believe we can. I'm a really very much problem solver, and let's get to the root of the problem. And, you know, I'm not afraid of conflict, because I think conflict is a step that you need to identify where you don't agree with each
Absolutely.
Other, and then you can work through that. So I'm good at all of that.
So you mentioned this being a bipartisan position. Nonpartisan position. Do you feel like that's removed a barricade or removed obstacles for the public to want to be more involved?
I think for some, I think it will take a few election cycles to really work itself out. You know, some people really want to know what camp or what tribe you're with. And I've resisted that, because I think, you know, the voters really decided they wanted these county races to be nonpartisan, get away from the partisan bickering or, you know, all of that posturing. So I think a lot of people I've talked to are relieved by that.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You talk a little bit in your bio about earning the public's trust, providing quality service, public safety, quick response to calls for help. That's a hot topic, and as it should be as we go through the process of reform and education. How do you see your role in progressing that and pushing and rebuilding that trust or providing that trust for?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's confusing. You know, there's an independently elected sheriff, so there's the sheriff's department, and then there's the county council. The sheriff comes to the council and says, I need this money for this, and the council provides the money. And so I don't know that that's been altogether smooth communications between the two. I was heartened by Measure 11 being adopted by, I think, close to 60% of the voters. So I think the support is out there, you know, because you have to pay for services. I'm all for building back the number of deputies that have been lost. And we're competing with Portland, the city of Vancouver.
Right.
And, you know, it's maybe a bit of a different world now for us in Clark County, but we have to step up to make sure those services are available. And in my district, in District 5, you know, there are, you know, that northern area, it's they can call and there's no response. So I think we need to build back the ability to serve all of the communities in Clark County.
And lastly, and this is something that I love that is in your statement, empowering the public through transparent decision making. My first thought when I read this, transparency and politics are not two words you normally find together. And I think it's wonderful for a candidate to point that out and talk about the importance of transparency. So I just wanted to give you a moment to kind of talk about that and enlighten us a little bit about why that particular statement, what is important to you about transparency, and how do you plan on being transparent with your decision making?
Sure. My career, a lot of my career I spent working with people who are disenfranchised. And I myself, I've been in the minority viewpoint on some things and not felt like my voice has been heard. So I think people need to get adequate notice of things. They need to understand what decision is being made. I think a lot of public policy, it seems like it, something is presented and the public reacts to it without maybe even understanding, and it doesn't seem like there's really an openness to change things based on what people have to say. So I think people need to understand that their voices, what they have to say, will be considered. And you consider it by, responding to it. You could have a written response. The community thought this, this, and this, and this is why we decided to do it this, that, and the other way. So adequate notice, and having, we need to reach out to some communities that don't normally come to the table, that come to City Hall or the county office, who may not feel safe doing that, are very uncomfortable. So I think there needs to be more outreach to communities to garner their interest in things. Because otherwise, you're making decisions that don't really reflect the community, and they may not hold up over time or be the best decisions, frankly.
No, wonderfully put. And as we wrap up here, I thought I'd give you a moment. If you want to speak to the voters who are sitting down at their tables today or are getting ready to start putting the serious thought into casting these votes, and what do you want to reach out to them, let them know?
Well, one of the things that, as I've been going around, often people don't understand what the county level of government really decides on. And they're deciding on the roads, the development, sometimes how crowded the schools might be. And public health is another arena that the county decides. So it's a wide scope of issues, and they really impact people day to day. So I just encourage people to really look closely at the information in weighing the decisions. I feel like I'm confident that I can do a very good job. I have the values and the experience, and I wouldn't have gotten into this and worked as hard as I had if I wasn't bent on making things better. And so that's what I intend to do.
Well, awesome. We're in the studio with Sue Marshall running in District number 5. And I think for all the voters out there, whether you're voting for Sue, whoever you're voting for, get out there and vote, educate yourselves, make a difference. Because this does matter. This does matter in the long run. So thank you, Sue, so much for coming in. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Special edition of Voices from Our Community.
KXRW Radio would like to help spread the word about food availability. Head to ClarkCountyFoodBank.org and click on Find Food to access a map and printable list of pantry locations throughout the region where you can go to pick up food and take it home. That's ClarkCountyFoodBank.org.